Okay, welcome to the Research Methods course, and this is the third lecture about quantitative research. And the idea of quantitative research was that it's research that is done with numbers, and we have three important things that we have to consider. First, what do we want to say with the numbers? Sometimes it's okay to just describe, like a descriptive finding would be that students who take an exam fail 50% of the time. That's a descriptive finding. Then we could have a predictive finding, which means that we find that some characteristics of students predict. So we can actually say that some students are more likely to pass than others. And then the strongest form of claim is a causal claim, when we say that by doing something, something will happen. And that kind of research results are typically most interesting because they have policy implications. Like, for example, if we say that studying causes you to perform better on exam, then that has a clear policy implication that you should study. Then the second question was, where do we get the numbers? So typically in information systems research, we are interested in things that are not readily available for us. For example, user satisfaction on an information system. We can't just go and check the box that the information system came in and see what's the satisfaction on that box. We have to somehow get the satisfaction from the actual users. And to do that, we typically use some kind of survey. So we ask people, do they like the system or not? We talked a bit about surveys last time, and we'll talk a bit more today. And then once we have the numbers, then the question is, what do we do with the numbers? And typically, what we do with the numbers is some kind of correlation or a regression analysis, which is a generalization of a correlation. We have four lectures about quantitative research. First, we talked a bit about inference and can you rule out chances and explanation. That's we use p-values for that. So p-value quantifies the plausibility of chance explanation. Then we talked a bit about causality. So how do you claim that the difference between, let's say, men and women-led companies' profitabilities is because of the CEO gender and not because of some other reason? Last time we talked about measurement, and now we'll talk about regression analysis most of today. Then next Monday, I will walk you through how I would actually do a data or a research project. Like, I start with a research question, then we talk a bit on where do we get the data to answer my research question, and then I will walk you through how I actually analyze the data and how I would report the data. And then you can apply same kind of workflow when you write your own master's thesis or if you end up doing some kind of other research project using quantitative methods. Last time we discussed, on Monday, we discussed measurement. And measurement refers to quantifying things. So we have to get numbers for things such as information systems, development projects, success, system responsiveness, user satisfaction. So we have to quantify these things for us to be able to analyze them. Two most important qualities of measurement are reliability and measurement validity. So reliability means that if we measure the same thing, we get the same result over and over. So if you step on a scale, then you expect to get the exact same number for your weight every time because scale is quite reliable. If it's an old-fashioned scale that's not electronic, then if you step on it, you have to let it settle for a while before it gives you the number. But reliability is the degree of random noise in our data. So it's kind of like noise to the signal ratio. Then validity is do our measures actually capture the thing that we're interested in? So if we ask a person whether they like the information system or not, does that really measure, for example, information system quality, or does it perhaps measure something else? And that's the validity is much more difficult question than reliability. If we have unreliable measures, unreliability is this one, then we can improve the reliability by taking multiple measures and taking an average or a sum, depending on what's more convenient. Average is probably easier to understand. Validity, on the other hand, if we are asking questions that don't actually measure the thing that we are interested in, like, or for example, if we are measuring a person's intelligence by measuring the circumference of their head, then no matter how many times we do it, it doesn't improve the result because we are measuring fundamentally incorrectly. So validity is much more serious. Typically, when we do studies, we have to study people and information systems, so we have to get information about people. The easiest way to get information or data about people is to ask the people, do a survey. And another way of getting information from a people would be to do a field study, which refers to not asking, but actually observing what people do when they use the system. But typically ask because it's the easiest way. We do these questionnaires or survey studies, and quite often we ask the same question over and over in a slightly different format. The idea here is that each individual question, if we ask whether you like the system or not from 1 to 5 scale, if you really like it, 4.5 instead of one of these options, then you're going to choose between 4 and 5 rather randomly. So there is some unreliability in survey questions, and we try to eliminate the effect of unreliability by asking the same question slightly differently. So we ask, do you like the system? Were you satisfied the last time you used the system? Did the system achieve its purpose the last time you used it, and so on? Then, so we have these multiple questions. Then what we do with multiple questions, the Venkatesh paper that I gave you as a material is a good example. They explain that typically we average the responses, so a person's score or person's value for information accuracy would be a sum of these three questions from 1 to 5 scale, or a mean. And then we check that if three questions that are supposed to measure the same thing are highly correlated, then we conclude that the measures or the variables are reliable. And reliability is typically quantified with Cronbach's alpha statistic, which is calculated based on those correlations by a computer. You don't have to understand the calculation. Typically, if reliability is 0.7 or 70%, we conclude that that's good enough, and then we write the paper about it. Before we start creating these sums from our survey responses, we have to do a factor analysis, though. And the idea of a factor analysis is that we put all our data into a computer, and then we ask the computer to do a factor analysis, and the computer finds out which of these variables in our data, which of the questions go together. So do the questions naturally form some kind of groups? Then these groups are called factors. The computer finds, let's say it finds 10 factors in our data. So we have 30 questions and they group into 10 factors. Then we interpret the result by looking at whether those factors correspond to the things that we want to measure. So here is an example from the Venkatesh paper. And they have roughly 30 questions and they have 11 factors that they got from the questions. And these numbers here are called factor loadings, and they quantify how strongly each question is related to each factor. And the factor analysis here tells that these accuracy 1, 2, and 3 items are measuring the same thing because they load on one factor, and loadings for all other factors are close to zero. Also, we can see that all other items here don't really load on the first factor, and these items don't really load on any other factor. So we conclude that these three indicators measure one thing and one thing only, and no other questions measures that same thing. So we do this to validate our measurement, the factor analysis. Then, when we have the actual data, when we have collected the data, we have checked reliability, we have done a factor analysis, and we have calculated the means of our survey responses so that we have one variable for information accuracy and one variable for, let's say, intention to use e-government, then we can start to test our theory. And the logic in quantitative research follows typically deductive reasoning. So we first make a theoretical claim. So here in the Venkatesh paper, one of their claims was that information accuracy leads to more use, and they explain why that should be the case. And then they observe that, okay, if information accuracy really leads to more intention to use the e-government system, then we should observe that a variable that is supposed to measure information accuracy is going to be correlated with a variable that is supposed to measure intention to use e-government system. So we form a hypothesis. Accuracy is positively related to intention to use e-governments. So this is a statement, a statistical association that we expect we observe from the data. So what should we observe, and the step going from theory, a general claim, to a specific observation, it's called a deductive step. I also show you this other framework on the first and maybe on the second lecture. So the idea is that we have information accuracy, a theoretical concept. It explains why people want to use the system. And we make a theoretical proposition. We make a claim that information accuracy causes people to be more likely to use the system. Then based on that proposition, we derive a hypothesis. A variable, survey questions about information accuracy will be the empirical concept here, and survey questions about intention to use will be the second empirical concept. And then we check if the survey questions that are supposed to measure accuracy correlate in a specific sample with the information, with the questions that are supposed to measure our intention to use. If they do, we conclude that the hypothesis is supported, and then we are generalized from the hypothesis to proposition, and we argue that people actually use systems more if the systems are more accurate, which at least to me makes a lot of sense. So that's, we've basically, in a nutshell, what we have done this far. And today we're going to talk about how we actually test the statistical association here. Correlation is a simple way of measuring association, but the problem with correlation is that it only takes two variables. So if we have, let's say, CEO's gender and profitability, we can conclude that they are correlated. But correlation is not enough for making a causal claim, because we have to rule out the alternative explanations. So we have to kind of figure out the correlation after we control for the alternative explanations. And that's what the regression analysis does. Let's go and look in more detail what they do in the Venkatesh paper. And they have this kind of figure. Any idea what the figure is about? What is that kind of figure about? Well, the figure has boxes, and it has arrows, and it has text. So what do the boxes refer to? So we have a box called intention to use e-government. We have a box called accuracy. What do these boxes refer to? They refer to the variables that the researchers are analyzing. So this kind of boxes and arrows diagram is typically included in a paper to summarize which kind of statistical associations are being tested. So these guys are testing hypothesis one here. Accuracy is related to intention to use e-government, and we can see it from this slide presented in text form. So typically we have that kind of boxes and arrows diagram to show, some people call it research model, but it's basically a summary of all the hypotheses that are going to be tested in that paper empirically. And this has importantly, well, it has lots of variables, so it's quite complex, but they have three different kinds of relationships. So they have these, we have a relationship here, hypothesis that accuracy is positively related to intention to use e-government. And then we have this arrow that goes to the middle of the second arrow, and that is that refers to that a moderation, which means that the transparency, for example, here, transparency of information influences the relationship between these two variables. So it can be stronger or weaker, depending on whether the information is transparent or not. Then we have mediation models. So all these predictors of intention to use e-government, they predict intentions, and then intentions predict actual use. So what the model tells us, or the figure tells us, that the information accuracy can only influence the actual use of e-government services through influencing people's intentions. So you first have an intention to use, and then for some people that the intention to use actually manifests as actual use of the information. So that's a summary of the hypothesis. Then related to the hypothesis, they have this kind of table. And any idea what that table is about? This is a subset of the table, and we'll be looking at this table, and one of the potential exam questions that we have new for this year is that you're going to be telling in the exam, what does this table tell us? So what kind of table is it? Has anyone ever seen this kind of table before? Yeah. Well, the table says that it's regression analysis results. So we know that it's some kind of analysis results from something called a regression analysis. And these kind of tables, we're going to be looking at more that table more detail, but this kind of tables presenting regression analysis results is the most common way of showing statistical support for the hypothesis shown in the diagram on the previous picture. Most research papers follow this format. So you first have a diagram where you show all the hypotheses, so it's easy to read what kind of associations you expect to observe. And then you have a table showing in a certain format all the observed associations. And regression analysis is the workhorse for that. We do regression analysis because correlation can't, in most cases, demonstrate causality, because there could be many other reasons. The idea of regression analysis is to address the third condition for demonstrating causality. The first one was an association, so a correlation. And the second one was that the cause occurs before the effect. And that comes from your research design. You have to collect the independent variable before the dependent variable. And then regression analysis is an implementation of ruling out alternative explanations through statistical modeling or controlling. The idea of a regression analysis is very similar to a correlation. So in a correlation, you have two variables, and correlation quantifies how strongly those two variables are associated linearly. So if correlation is +1 or -1, then it means that if we plot these two variables on a plane, then it's going to be a straight line. And regression analysis also kind of plots things on a plane, but it plots what is the unique influence on one variable after we control for others. So the idea is that we have one dependent variable that we want to explain. For example, in the CEO gender example, it would be return on assets. In the Venkates paper, it's for most of the paper, it's the intention to use e-government. So there is one thing that you explain, and then you test alternative explanations for that one dependent variable, and those alternative explanations are called independent variables. So you have one or more independent variables, and then the objective of the analysis is to explain the variation of the dependent variable using the variation in the independent variable. So the variation means that some people answer 5 to a question, do you intend to use e-government services? Some people answer 1, some people answer somewhere between. So there's variation in how people reply to questions. And the idea of regression analysis is to explain that variation. Typically, we can explain between 10 or 30% of variation in anything that people do. So people are highly unpredictable. For example, we could explain return on assets with CEO gender, firm size, and industry. And the regression model would be here. So we say that return on asset is a linear function. So it's a weighted sum of CEO is female, firm revenue, and perhaps whether it's a manufacturing company or not. And then we have some variation that is left over that we can't explain. This is typically presented graphically. And the graphical presentation is with a Venn diagram. And here we have company performance, return on assets, CEO gender, and company size, for example. The correlation between our two variables is this area that overlaps here. And that's the correlation between size and gender, that's the correlation between performance size. Now, the correlation only does not allow us to make a causal claim because there's this overlap here. So it could be that some of this correlation between gender and performance relationship is due to the fact that smaller companies are more likely to have women CEOs and smaller companies are also more profitable. So there is some overlap between these three variables. Regression analysis takes away the overlap. So conceptually, what regression analysis using two independent variables, gender and size, to explain performance, conceptually what it does is that it eliminates all variation that is shared by gender, size, and performance. So it takes a bite away, and it leaves us how much do gender and performance correlate after we consider the effect of size. If we have all relevant control variables, all relevant alternative explanations included in the model, then we will get an estimate of what is the causal effect of CEO gender on profitability that cannot be explained by any other alternative explanation. So we rule out alternative explanations by adding more variables. We could add more variables, we bite away more pieces of the pie here. And let's say here's another control variable. It explains a small part, but there is still substantial correlation. So that's the idea. You take away parts of the correlation that can be attributed to other alternative explanations, and then you're left with a clean estimate of the causal relationship. So the control variables are driven by theory because you have an alternative explanation. So you have an alternative reason why CEO gender and profit and company profitability could correlate. Then you have to think for an alternative reason. Why would there be a correlation other than our favorite interpretation that it's actually the CEO gender that causes the profitability differences? So we have to think these all alternative theories through and then include those in our model. The advantage of using a regression analysis is that it kind of allows us to do an experimental study in a non-experimental setting. So as long as we have control for included all relevant alternative explanations, then it's as good as doing an experiment. Of course, we can never know if we have included every possible explanation. It's possible that you write a research paper about the relation between CEO gender and profitability, And then someone reads the paper and says that, well, you didn't take it into consideration that our companies in Eastern Finland and Western Finland are going to be different in this regard. And that could be the reason that there's a correlation. If that's really an explanation and you hadn't taken it into account, then your regression results would be untrustworthy. So it's really important that you think it through first. What are the major challenges, major alternate explanations? Then include those in the regression analysis. The regression model is typically interpreted in two different ways or on two different levels. First of all, we want to interpret whether there is an effect or not. And to do that, we look at the p-value. So is there some kind of relationship that's either positive or negative? And can it be attributed to chance? If the p-value is low for a regression coefficient, like for a correlation, then if it's below 0.05, that means that we are confident that chance wouldn't have produced that kind of result. So there's probably some kind of relationship. So between saying that there is a relationship that's positive or between saying that it's a negative, there is another thing that you have to consider, and that's whether the effect is large. So sometimes, let's say that the CEO gender has a positive impact on company profitability, but it's possible that the effect is so small that it's of no practical relevance. So in a regression analysis, we then interpret what is the size of the effect, what is the strength of the association. And the interpretation is called ceteris paribus, and that's from economics, and it means holding all other things constant. And in this case, the idea in regression analysis is that if we take a set of companies from the same industry and that are exactly the same size, then size and industry can't explain the difference, why some companies are more profitable than others. If we have companies that are in the same industry, that are on the same size, then the regression model, because we included size and industry here, tells us that on average, a women-led company is, on average, beta 1 more profitable. This beta 1 is a result from our regression analysis. It's a regression coefficient. It could be, for example, 0.03, so 3%, or something like that. And this table 2 in the Venkates paper tells us the regression coefficients. So let's take a look at this table in more detail, because interpreting, if you read the paper and you can't interpret this table, you are basically relying on that the authors had interpreted results correctly. So you're just trusting the authors blindly. And typically, many researchers want to exaggerate their results. So you want to make claims that your results are great and you have a strong effect. You have strong evidence that something happens that you want to claim. And then when you look at the actual numbers, they show that, yeah, the effect is in the same direction, but it's not nearly as important as what the researchers claim, because there's some advertising going on as well. So this table, too, is the regression analysis result. And we can see first that there are three regression models. So we have block 1, block 2, and block 3. Why they call them blocks, I don't know. That's just what they do here. It's not a very common thing to call them blocks. Usually we say model 1, model 2, model 3. So they have three sets of regression analysis results. This is 1, 2nd, and 3rd. And the idea of these three models is that we have first control variables only model. Then we have the control variables and the interesting variables. And then we have a model where we say that the effects of the interesting variables vary as functions of the other variables. I'll talk about that in a moment. So we have three models, and let's take a look at the first model. So we have this first model. They have a regression analysis with 7 independent variables. So they're saying that government, the use of intention to use government websites depends on person's gender very weakly. It is not statistically significant because there are no stars. So stars are used to indicate these p-values. So gender has no relationship on whether a person wants to use government, e-government services or not. Then a person's age is positively associated with the use of e-government websites, e-government services. Why do you think there is a positive relationship? Does it make sense that older people are more likely to use e-government services? Government-provided online services. Why would that be the case? When we look at these results, we have to think whether the results make sense or not. It is statistically significant with less than, p is less than 0.01. So, 0.01. So we can't really say that that's by chance only. Why would older people be more likely to use government information systems? Well, let's say that everyone has to file their taxes, right? Do you think, how many of you think that older people are more likely to file taxes online instead of using paper form than younger people? Which one is more likely to use a government website and e-government service to file taxes? Older or younger person? Yeah, younger are typically more use more these kind of systems. So why do they get a positive effect? Yeah, maybe older people are more likely to use government services generally. If you're an old person, you get retirement money and so, and then you have to use the systems more. So we go through this one at a time. We look at what's the effect of income. Why would that be positive? Poor people may not have computers at home. So this is made, this is done in the United States, where the income distribution is a lot less equal than in Finland. So we go through and we look at the signs. Signs, and then we start to look at the magnitude. Okay, which of these variables is the most important? So these are standardized regression coefficients, which means that we can directly compare. And need for government service and internet self-efficacy are both positively related to intention to use e-government, and they are stronger than others. Makes lots of sense. So if you need to use a system and if you're confident in using a system, those are stronger determinants for system use than, for example, your gender or age. But if these, if we have two people that have the same level of need for government service, the same level of internet self-efficacy, then the person who is has more money is more likely to use the system. So that's how we interpret the regression results. So holding other things constant, then these regression coefficients will tell us. It could be that they will tell us the effect. It could be that actually poor people use government information, government systems more than rich people, even if the regression coefficient shows the other way around. The reason is that poor people generally have more use for government services. Particularly the United States, if you're rich, you think that government is a waste of money. You don't want to do anything with the government. So that's control for the need of government services. So for a person who needs government services that is poor, and a person who needs government services who's rich, the richer is more likely to use e-system. So that's the way how we interpret it. So the interpretation, technically, it's that one standard deviation increase in internet self-efficacy leads to 0.23 standard deviation increase in the use of e-government. Is standard deviation R, is it a large unit or not? So let's say that the average height of a Finnish male is 177 centimeters. If you are one standard deviation taller than an average Finnish man, how tall would you be? I think it's about 185, but yeah. I think it's 185. Is it a large difference between 176 and 185? Oh. I haven't checked the numbers. You may be correct. Is it a large difference? Yeah, so one standard deviation is pretty large difference. 0.02 standard deviations, it's a meaningful difference. So we start to think, are these results actually, are the effects large or not? And which one is the largest? So that's how we interpret the result. The stars here are results of, these correspond to p-values with the null hypothesis that there is no effect. And we usually have here in the table footer, we have a legend for the p-values. So it tells us how do we interpret the stars. We don't write the actual p-values because it would make the table more difficult to read. It would provide the reader too much information. So we just show which ones are significant, which ones are not. Then the important consideration is the effect large or not? Some variables, it's probably important in terms of self-efficacy, but education, 0.01, that explains about 1% of the variation in the dependent variable. So that's not as important. Okay, so we have three regression tables, and the regression coefficients tell us what is the impact of one variable when we control for others. Then we have here in the table end, we have these are not regression coefficients. They are called model indices. So they are numbers or statistics that tell us something about the regression model. And typically, you have a sample size somewhere. So they have sample size here in the table footer. So this is 1,800. And then you have R-square statistics. So we have here it says R-square, adjusted R-square, and delta R-square. So the R-square tells how large share of the variation of the dependent variable the independent variables explain together. So it's kind of like a correlation between one variable and many variables instead of between two variables. So the R-square tells us graphically, if we have the performance as the dependent variable, it tells us how much of this circle of performance is covered by these circles of gender and size. So it tells us the ratio of this area of performance. Here we can see from the first model that it explains, the control variables explain just 10% of the variation of the intention to use e-government. When we add six more variables that were the ones that they were interested in this paper, they can explain 33% of the variation. So is 10% versus 33%, is it a big difference? Yeah, so that's why the paper was published. They found that their control variables explained the dependent variable to some extent, but actually the interesting variables explain the dependent variable a lot more. Then we have adjusted R-square, and regression analysis gives R-square values that are slightly too large. And how much too large they are depends on your sample size and how many variables you put into the regression analysis. So adjusted R-square is quite commonly reported, and It's usually a slightly smaller number. If your sample size, if you have just 50 respondents, then it could be between 0.33 to 0.28. But here the difference is very small because their sample size is so large. The idea of having three different models is that we have first the control variables, then we have the controls, and the interesting variables. They even say here that these are the control variables, and these are the interesting variables, and Quite often we look at how much does the R squared increase when we add the important variables, and that's quantified with delta R squared. So the delta means change, so generally. And so the difference between this R squared and that R squared is 0.23. And then the three stars tell us whether that difference could be attributed to chance only. And it's statistically significant. Chance is not a plausible explanation. Any questions or comments about interpreting regression analysis results?
So the more stars and d-value means
it tells that chances are a less likely explanation. So the more stars you have, the smaller the p-value, the less plausible chance is an explanation. So three stars in this table and usually means that there is less than 1 in 1,000 chance to get this kind of result if there actually is no relationship between, let's say, internet self-efficacy and use of government services. So the p-value is calculated on an assumption that there is no effect, and then how likely we would be getting this kind of effect by chance only. Their sample sizes are 1,800, so that's a large sample, and usually when you have a large sample, then the chance explanation is not that relevant. If we had 50 people, then the significance levels would be a lot lower, because in small samples you can get large effects by chance only. We can see that 0.07 is enough to be statistically significant, but 0.01 is not significant. So it's if we don't have the stars, it means that we can say that this 0.01 effect of gender is probably just a chance finding. It's so small that it could really be zero. So we never get the exact right effects. Let's say we want to generalize this analysis to adult population in the United States. Let's say that's our population and this is our sample. So whenever we calculate something from the sample, the result will not be the exact population value. If the sample size is small, then the results are likely to be further from the real values if we actually had studied everybody in the States. So that's the role of sample size and p-value. So we look at first, when I see a regression analysis table, I look at the R-square. Does the model really explain the dependent variable at all? Then if the R-square is close to zero, I move on, because typically people claim that their variables explain some phenomenon. If the model says that none of these independent variables really explain the dependent variable, then the claim is going to be weak, unless they're specifically claiming that something doesn't have an effect, which is pretty rare. Then I look at which regression coefficients have the stars, so which are probably not chance findings. And then I start to look at, okay, which one of these is the largest, and are the largest effects meaningfully large? Regression analysis is a really robust tool, but it's the most commonly used tool for testing research hypotheses. But it's not something that can be applied always. So sometimes you need to do something else beyond regression analysis. And the reason is that regression analysis and any other statistical analysis that you could apply always makes some assumptions. So these techniques are built on some assumptions. If the assumptions hold, then the technique provides us results that we can trust. If the assumptions don't hold, then we can't trust the results, and we have to do something else. For that reason, it is important to do diagnostics after regression analysis. And this is more for those who are going to be using regression analysis. The idea of regression analysis is that we find what is the linear relationship or a line between two variables after we have eliminated the influence of all other independent variables. Regression analysis assumes that there's a line, so the relationship between two variables can be expressed with a line. instead of, for example, a curve. And it also assumes that these observations are normally distributed around the line. And how we actually estimate the regression analysis is that we draw this line, or the computer kind of like draws this line in this memory, and then it checks, okay, how far each observation is from the regression line. And that difference is called residual. So this is let's say we have education of an occupation here, and this is the prestige of an occupation. So this is another demonstration data set that's commonly used. And we can see that there's a positive effect. The more education you get, the more prestigious occupations you get to. So if you just finish at high school, then you really can be a doctor, which is highly prestigious. And then, but some occupations are less prestigious than their education would predict, and some are more prestigious. So the difference between the predicted value and the actual is called residual. The regression line is defined such that the sum of squared residuals is as small as possible. That's the estimation principle. The reason why I'm explaining this is that the residuals are important for diagnostics. When you do a regression analysis, after you have interpreted the results and you have figured out that you have an interesting result, then you go and you inspect, okay, which cases does my model explain well, which cases it doesn't. So which cases have large residuals? And then do some checks. The assumptions for regression analysis are, it makes 6 assumptions, and typically assumptions are done by checked by plotting the residuals from the analysis against the dependent variable or independent variable or something else. So we have your statistical software, when it does regression analysis, it also gives you these scatterplot-like things that you can then check if the regression assumptions hold. I'm not going to talk about those in detail. I'm going to talk about the assumptions. So the first assumption is that all relationships are linear. So regression analysis assumes that the effect of prestige on education goes linearly instead of, for example, going exponentially. So this would be a violation of regression analysis assumption. If linear relationship doesn't hold, then you have to do something else. For example, do you think that the amount of education is linearly related to your salary? So let's say you get you just finished the compulsory education, 9 years. Then you go to a vocational school for 3 years. How much more are you gonna make? Are you gonna make 1/3 more? Or are you gonna make a lot more than 1/3 more? So wages is something that usually don't grow linearly. The later years of education pay a lot more. So education and salary actually follows that kind of thing. If you decide to be a doctor, you make 4 or 5 times as much money than a person who just decided to do the mandatory 9 years of education. And doctor does about 20 years of education altogether. So the difference is a lot more than twice. Then we have 3 other assumptions. And regression analysis assumes that the observations are independent. What it means is that it's easy to understand what it means if you think when it would not hold. So for example, if you are doing a survey, you're following people for 30 days, and they have to do a survey once a month, so you have 6 responses for each person. Then those responses are not independent, because the responses from one person are going to be more similar with one another than responses between 2 people. So, or if you're studying students, 50 students that are self-assigned to 10 teams of five, then there's going to be more variation between teams than within teams. So that's one assumption. In master's thesis, workers typically don't have to worry about that because you don't get to do a longitudinal study. But for people who do this for a living, that's a big consideration. Then there is something called no perfect collinearity, which means that every variable must bring some new information to the model. And if you have, as an independent variable, you have height as centimeters, you have height as inches in the model. So you have the exact same variable, but in a slightly different metric. Then regression analysis can be run, because you can't say whether it's the height in centimeters or height in inches that influence the finding. And this is normally not checked, because you will not even get the results if that doesn't hold. Then we have error terms, expected values. So the part that the model doesn't explain should be completely uncorrelated with any of the independent variables. In practice, that's something that you have to argue based on theory, and it's about whether all relevant alternative explanations have been included in the model. It can be... So if we're saying that if we know that your income depends on your education and it depends on your age. If you're a bit older, you earn a bit more. If you're more educated, then you earn a bit more. And we know that education and age are correlated. So if you're a bit older, if you are 30, you're more likely to be more educated than if you're 20. Because at 20, you're still at university. If we omit the education from the model and only estimate the relation between age and income, we are overestimating how much money you're going to be earning because there is an omitted variable. So we are omitting an important explanatory variable, important independent variable. So that's what the assumption number four is about. And that can be tested. You just have to think through your research problem, like why, what things explain e-government use, what things explain your income, what things could possibly explain why some companies are more profitable than others. Then you include all relevant things that your theory informs you into the model, and you hope that that's enough. Then there is a fifth assumption, is that the error terms equal variance given any value of independent variables. What it means that if we have a regression line here, then the observations are equally spread out around the regression line instead of being close to the regression line here and then spreading out over here. That's something, then we have to do something else. So if that happens, it's not the end of the world. We have to do something else instead of regression analysis. Then the final assumption in regression analysis is that the observations on the regression line are normally distributed. So most are close to the regression line. There are some that are far, but most are here roughly around the line. Some are elsewhere. And here's an example where it wouldn't hold. We have some observations that are far up, and most are slightly below the regression line. So that would be a violation of regression assumptions. These assumptions are something that you do diagnostics, and then there are things that you can do about it. If you don't do your models, if you don't do this diagnostics, then you can't trust the results. That's the basic thing. Then we have the final thing, which is not something that is technically an assumption in the analysis, but it is something that we nevertheless inspect. It's called outliers. Have any of you read the book called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell? Well, that's a good book. Anyway, outlier is an observation that is very different from others. And let's say that we have a profession that is very low prestigious, but requires lots of education. If we have one observation that clearly is very different from others, it could be a data entry mistake, for example. Then what will happen is that one observation that is very far from the regression line then pulls the regression line down or up, depending on where the observation is, so that the line no longer explains the majority of the observations well. And that's the final thing. We have to look if there are any variable, any cases, any professions, any companies, any individuals that the model doesn't really predict their behavior or their profitability that well. Then we have to look at that particular case. Could it be a data entry mistake? Is that something that shouldn't be in the sample? If we study what is the effect of, let's say, R&D subsidies on the revenues of small software companies, and we accidentally send a survey questionnaire to Tieto, then Tieto would be way elsewhere than the small companies that we're interested in, and that would influence our results greatly. So we want to eliminate those influential observations. So that's what you have to do in a regression analysis. First, you get some results. Then you ask, does the model explain the dependent variable at all? Is the R square substantially different from zero? 10% is pretty good. 30% is usually exceptionally high if we explain how people behave. And if you're in the 1 or 2% range, then most likely the result is not going to be very interesting. Then you look at the actual regression coefficients. What is the impact of one variable on another, on the dependent variable? You look at the which ones are significant, to which direction, and which ones are large. Then you do the diagnostics. You can do regression analysis can be applied to also interaction effects and mediation effects. We saw those in the boxes and arrows diagram. And interaction effect can be an effect that first goes up and then goes down. So we can have these U-shaped effects, or we can have effects of one variable depending on another variable. So we can have, for example, a variable X, variable of interest, let's say CEO gender. We have Y, let's say profitability, and then we have some moderators. So we were saying that, let's say it's country, and we're saying with this kind of model that the effect of CEO gender on profitability depends, the size of that effect depends or varies between countries. Why would that kind of model be interesting? Why is it interesting to know if the statistical association between two variables varies as a function of the third variable? Well, let's take a practical example. Let's say that the amount of food that you eat is statistically associated with how healthy you are. Is the association always the same? No. If you don't exercise, if you eat a little bit more than an average person, you're going to gain weight. But if you exercise, then the relation between weight gain, the eating and gaining weight, is weaker, for example. So it gives us the effects of context. When we make claims, theoretical claims about what happens, how and why, we are also interested in saying when it happens. Sometimes, whether you have a woman C or not makes a difference in some industries. In some other industries, possibly it doesn't. In the Venkates paper, they are saying that there is a uncertainty reduction, which they call transparency and trust. They influence the intention to use e-government, such that when transparency is high, then the relation between accuracy and completeness on intention to use is stronger. So it makes more difference whether the information is accurate if you are transparent or not. So that's what they're claiming. And we are testing these with regression analysis as well. How we test if an effect of one variable influences the effect of another variable on the dependent variable is that we multiply the things together. So we have intention is explained by completeness transparency, and then product of completeness and transparency. To understand why multiplying two variables gives the conditional effect of one variable on another, we can rearrange that equation a bit to this kind of format. So we have here that the effect of completeness depends on transparency and then some base level effect. So the higher transparency, the more completeness is related to our intention. So that's the idea. We test contextual effects. How we then present the results is that we have these models here. So we have first the model without the interaction, so without multiplying these things together, and it's labeled interaction terms in the paper. The first thing that we look at is the R-square again. So do adding these multiplied terms make the model better? Does the model with these multiplicative terms here, does it explain the dependent variable better than a model without? So in the first step, we were interested between controls and interesting variables. Now we have the linear effects of the interesting variables. And then we have these effects conditional on another variable. We conclude that the R-square increase is 0.07%, which is 7%, and that's pretty high. And it's also statistically significant with p is less than 0.001 based on the stars. Okay, we conclude that we probably should be interpreting these results. How they are interpreted when you multiply things together is a bit iffy or a bit tricky, because regression analysis tells you what is the effect of one variable, and it assumes that the effect is always the same, so the effects are linear. But here we have a variable that can go up, the effect can be positive if transparency is high, and it can be negative if transparency is low, or it can be zero when transparency is low. So we interpret it by doing something of neat. So we plot the data and plot the model. In the Venkates paper, they explained that they followed guidance by Eichen and West's book. And what they basically do is that you calculate using this model, you calculate what is the predicted intention if your completeness is -1, transparency is -1, or +1 or +1. So you calculate four different possible combinations, and then you do some math, and then you plot. So we can calculate from the regression model what is the value of intention when completeness is at -1, transparency is at -1, and we have here the value for that low completeness, low transparency. Then we calculate low transparency -1, high completeness +1, and we draw a line. Then we calculate what is low completeness, high transparency, high completeness, and high transparency. We draw a line. Then we can see that, okay, how does the result actually go? So the effect of low transparency, it's negative effect, but it's less strong as for high transparency. So high transparency, positive effect, low transparency, negative effect. And this is kind of like drawing a regression line for a subset of the data. So these kind of models are the important things that are that you multiply things together, then you get the effect of one variable conditional on another variable. So it varies as a function of another variable. Then what we do then is that we calculate first a regression model without these things that are multiplied together. Then we add the term that is multiplicative. Then we compare. And then we do a plot like they did in the paper, and then we interpret the result. So that's one very common way of using regression analysis for theory testing. We're not only interested in whether there's a positive or negative effect, but is the effect stronger in some conditions than others? So that's interactions. Any questions? Another interesting relationship or form is mediation. So the effect of one variable, X on Y, goes through a third variable. And singleton and straight refer to these as intervening variables. So, for example, we could say that the prestigiousness of your occupation mediates the relationship between your education level and your income. So just increasing your income, your education level, doesn't give you more money into your pocket, but you have to also go to more prestigious occupations. So if you are a worker on an assembly line, which is not very prestigious, and you go and you get more education, unless you go to more prestigious occupations, then you will not see any more money in your bank account. But if you get more education, then you get access to these occupations that are more prestigious and therefore pay more. So mediation is interesting because it allows us to study mechanisms. So what is the mechanisms through which increasing your education influences your salary? The Venkatesh paper, they say that the mechanism of how these information quality characteristics influence people's use of e-government is that they first influence the person's intention to use. And then that person's intention to use influences whether they actually use the system. And then that then influences the satisfaction. So they have this chain. So if these quality characteristics have no effect on intention to use, then they can't have an effect on the actual use. And this kind of, it's called a full mediation model, and they are very common in information systems research. How we do this kind of network in a regression analysis framework that can only explain one dependent variable at a time, it's quite simple. So here is a mediation model. We're saying that y is the function of mediator and mediator is the function of x only. So we have two regression models instead of one. So we are estimating this effect first, and then we estimate effects of m and x on y. We call it the full mediation if, when controlling for the mediator here, there is no effect of x on y. So for example, holding the prestigiousness of your occupation constant, it doesn't matter how much education you have. That would be a full mediation. Education influences your income only through giving you access to more prestigious occupations. That's actually supported by the data. The way we do this with regression analysis is that we run three different regressions. So first of all, we have the dependent variable on the main independent variable. We ask whether income and education are associated at all. If they are not associated, then it's very difficult to claim that association would go through another third variable if there is no association in the first place. Then we check, does the independent variable influence the variable that lies in between, the mediator? And then we check whether mediator and the independent variable influence the dependent variable. The effect of x through m to y is then this is the product of these two regression coefficients. So let's take a look at practical example, the Venkatesh paper again. I like this paper because they present a so good collection of basic techniques. And they actually do it pretty well. Not all papers do it well. So we have here, transparency is the x variable. Then we have trust, the mediator variable. And then intention use is the final dependent variable. So that's one of their mediators and models. We are interested in the regressions of transparency and trust are the explanatory variables. So x, transparency, m, trust here. And they first regress. So this table contains lots of regression models, only of which a subset is relevant for this particular particular question. So the steps in regression analysis is to testing mediation is regressing y on x, then regressing m on x, and y on m and x. So which one of these models has intention to use regressed on transparency but not trust? To answer that question, we have to first look at, okay, what's the dependent variable? Here the dependent variable is transparency. Here it's trust. Here is intention to use e-government. And now we are interested in explaining intention to use e-government, so we look at these regression models here. And then we try to find a model where we have transparency as an explanatory variable, but not trust. So it's this model here. Transparency, but not trust. So that's the first model in... that's a bit off. Yeah, this block C gives us transparency on intention to use, controlling for all this other stuff. Then in the second model, we regress trust on transparency. So we look at the models for trust, and we look at the one with the same variables, and then when transparency is included. So that's our model two. And then we try to find what's the third model, where we add trust, and then we have this final model here. So that's the third model. So in practice, we run multiple models, and that gives us a test of mediation. So we do multiple regression models for three different purposes in a basic case. We have the control variables only model, and then we have the control variables and interesting variables. We want to look at the R-square value of whether the interesting variables explain the data more than the controls only. So that's one use case. The second use case is if we are looking at these effects of one variable that depend on another variable, which we call moderation. And in that case, we do have the interesting variables model, and then we have a model that contains the same interesting variables and some of those multiplied together. And then we have the final case when we are looking at these effects that go through the mediating variable, and then we do three different models listed here. So we typically have to run multiple models. We arrange them in a table, and then when we have the table, then we just write our paper, tell what the results mean. So that's about the theory and interpretation of regression results. Let's now go through a workflow of how you would apply these techniques that I have discussed this far for a research problem. Then on Monday, I will demonstrate to you how it's actually done. So workflow for a project. What's the first step in a research project? Yeah, you need to have a research question, and in a statistical project, you need to have a hypothesis that you want to test. So you have a hypothesis. Where does the hypothesis come from? So we have a hypothesis that the variable called accuracy is related to variable called intention to use. Where does the hypothesis come from? It comes from the theory that we're testing. So the first step is in this actual analysis project here is that we have some kind of hypothesis that we start with. And the hypothesis comes from our theory. So we have some kind of explanation of why we think accuracy of information should be positively related or should cause people's intentions to use the system to be higher. Then we apply deductive logic and saying that if there is such causal relationship, then we should observe correlation between some measure of accuracy and some measure for intents. Then we go and we collect data for that. So data collection, typically some kind of a survey. Some people as master's thesis workers also do experiments. Some people use data collected by others, for example, some kind of log files or version control logs or something like that. Then we have an important step of getting to know your data. So before you analyze your data, you have to know what the data are about. And you can use Excel or statistical software and just look at the mean, standard deviations, correlation, and so on. Just that you understand what you're working with. And maybe you have some observations that you identify that, well, there is a company that reports that the revenue is negative. You can't have negative revenue, so you eliminate that as an error in your data. So that kind of things. Data cleaning comes first. Then we have a step of creating composite measures. And the idea of the composite measure is a general term for a summary of multiple different variables that are supposed to measure one thing. So we have, let's say, three survey questions for accuracy. We create a composite measure by taking a sum of those or a mean of those. And to do that, we have to apply factor analysis. We have to first verify that the indicators that we are summing actually measure the same thing. It doesn't make any sense to sum your height and weight, for example, because they measure two different things. So factor analysis is empirical support for creating a sum out of many different variables. Then we do descriptive statistics. And the idea is that when we have one variable for each concept or construct that we want to measure, then we want to see, okay, how are those variables related? To do that, we do a table of correlations, and it's usually table one in a paper. So that's the first results table. It's called Table 1, Descriptive Statistics and Correlations, in Venkat's paper. That's typically the title of the paper, of the table as well. So you show a table of means and standard deviations and correlations. So that's statistics, and then a person who understands all this gets all kinds of information from there. What you do here is that you look at the correlations. Are there some large correlations? Do the large correlations make sense? Are there some large negative correlations? Do they make sense? So do you have a good explanation for the correlation? And also, you have some a prior expectations that, for example, older people are more likely to use government systems. Then we check if there really is a positive correlation. So you do these kind of checks for the correlation table first and to have an initial idea of what kind of relationships exist. Then you go and you do your main analysis. The main analysis is typically a regression analysis or some extension of regression analysis. And then you make a table out of all the models that you had. You compare the models, controls only against the one with controls and interesting variables. And then if you have mediators or moderators, you do models for those. Once you have the table ready, then you do diagnostics and for the main analysis, and you could do some supporting analysis as well. For example, if we are doing a regression analysis 1,800, we could split it to two samples of about 900, analyze men and women separately to see if the effects are the same. Or we could, if we do a survey, we know that let's say we survey all students at this university. We know that the average age of a student is 25. Then we compare our average respondent's age to that known average of the population. If the average from our sample is 22, then we know that our sample is biased. So we do that kind of small additional analysis. Sometimes there are some important future questions that your research findings could lead to, and you could perhaps say something with your existing data. So we have some additional analysis there. Then once you have done the analysis, then comes the easy part. Then you just, if you're a master's thesis worker, you have collected your data, you have done all your analysis, then you just write what you did, and then you're done. So In quantitative research, when you get the regression table, you are typically 80% done. Because all the work has been, the hard part is here. So figuring a question and then figuring what you need to measure, figuring who is going to respond to your survey, how do you get the data. Then data collection, data processing, data analysis. If you know how to do it, it's a bit of a mechanical thing to do. If you don't know how to do it, then after you have done the regression table, then you are done with the hard part. Then you just explain what you did. In qualitative research, the actual of writing up the study is much more difficult because you analyze and write at the same time. In quantitative analysis, it's much more like a waterfall model where you complete stage by stage and then finally you just write what you did. In qualitative, it's more iterative, like agile software development. Key points from this lecture is that regression analysis is the workhorse. If you give me 5 articles from any leading information systems journal, then 2 out of those 5 are going to be using regression analysis, and the remaining 3 are going to be using some kind of extension of the regression analysis. The idea of regression analysis is that we have one dependent variable that is influenced by one or more independent variables. It gives us what is the unique effect, what is the effect of increasing your education by 1 year, holding your prestigiousness level of your occupation constant? What is the effect of being a slightly richer person on your intention to use e-government if you at the same time are on the same age level? So it gives us what is the effect of one variable on the dependent variable for 2 companies or 2 people that are equal on any other values. That's why we say holding things constant. Regression model, the y is the dependent variable. Then we use betas to refer to the regression coefficients. That's the strength of the association. And we use x's to refer to the independent variables. Y is this variation of the observations around the regression line. So regression finds a line, and then the observations vary around that line. They're not hardly ever exactly on the line. If you have all observations exactly on the regression line, then your model explains every observation perfectly and your R square is 1. If the model doesn't explain anything at all, R square is 0. So no explanation. Regression analysis makes a set of assumptions. And important thing to understand about the assumptions is that if you apply regression analysis, you have to check the assumptions. You don't have to, after this course, understand what all the assumptions mean. I just walk you through them to give you an idea. Then we have moderation and mediation are two very common applications of regression analysis. Moderation was that the strength of association between X and Y depends on a third variable. Then mediation is the strength of association X and Y goes through a third variable. So moderation and mediation are quite commonly confused, maybe because the terms are so similar. So moderation is a variable that influences the strength, and mediation is an intervening variable. Then quality, what makes a research high quality? So last time we talked about reliability and measurement validity. Then today's lecture is about statistical conclusion validity and also internal validity. Statistical conclusion validity basically means have we applied regression analysis correctly? So if we, for example, don't do the diagnostics and our relationship would not be linear, but it would be curving up, then our study would have low statistical conclusion validity because it's possible that we're making incorrect conclusions. Then internal validity refers to whether our identified statistical associations can be interpreted as causal effects. That can be done if we have control for every alternative explanation. So if all the relevant variables that should be controlled for are in the model, then we can conclude that our modeling results are internally valid. We're going to talk about external validity next time a bit. For next lecture, we have the materials, and we're going to be on Monday. I'm going to show you an example of a research project that applies these techniques that we have discussed this far. So we start by looking at, okay, we have a research question, what kind of data would we need? And I would hope that you have gone through all these four chapters and that you have skimmed the Venkatesh paper again to have an idea of how these are applied. If these concepts are difficult for you to understand, I recommend that you do three things. So after the lecture, check the material that I cite. What does the material say and how these concepts are applied in the Venkatesh paper? So look at it through different angles. That's not only by participating in the lecture. Any questions?